Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we're going to not have this be our longest episode per se, but do want to just put together a little bit of a, not a total mailbag, but just a discussion as to what's out there among the fan base. We do have a lot of questions that we weren't able to get to last time. And again, this won't be one of our longer running episodes, but do look forward to jumping into a little off-season conversation and excited to see where this takes us. As always, want to acknowledge our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce that make this podcast possible. And Louisiana Hot Sauce has been bringing you a fantastic, consistent product since 1928. And Bud, one of the great things about Louisiana Hot Sauce is that I know it's going to be there. I know that when I am, I think I'm now on to maybe my seventh or eighth bottle, and have had to actually go to the store once or twice and not just rely upon that of which they occasionally drop into the mail to me. And they've been doing it for almost 100 years now, and they're not going to put out any sudden press releases saying that they're going to have to shut down shop in 30 days or that they don't have assets on hand to continue with business. So a little bit of a slight there towards today's announcement from SoundCloud that we'll jump into here momentarily. But do want to thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce, not only for the product that they've brought to market for about 90 years, but for their support and what they have done to elevate the Nolcast in general and just help to consistently bring it to our listeners.
Indeed, Ingram. Happy to be back on this fine Thursday evening. And we'll keep this short here. SoundCloud laid off 40% of its staff last week, and sources told TechCrunch.com that their founders confessed that the layoffs only saved the company enough money to have runway until Q4, which begins in 80 days. So here's the deal. We don't know how long SoundCloud is going to be around. We know we're going to stay around because we've been doing this for, gosh, almost a decade now, I think. So if you are one of the few people who subscribe on SoundCloud, and we know that there are a couple hundred of you, SoundCloud is where we initially host this thing, and we use the RSS to shoot it out to iTunes, to Google Play Music, to Stitcher, to I think Podcast Republic and Podbean and a couple others. If you subscribe on a non-SoundCloud app, you're fine. If you subscribe literally on the SoundCloud app, we are telling you, go subscribe to either Apple Podcasts, which is iTunes, if you have an iPhone, or if you have an Android phone, go get Google Play Music and subscribe to us on there, because I don't know when or if SoundCloud is going to pull the rug out from under us here, and we don't want our SoundCloud listeners to be stuck without another outlet. So definitely make sure that you go subscribe either iTunes or Google Play Music so you can keep us without any sort of interruption.
Absolutely. Had a couple messages, emails, two people called me. This is not going to impact the Nolcast in any way. Certainly, we moved from our good old friends at TalkShoe, which was a comedy of errors in and of itself, to SoundCloud. And
oh, my God. Great, you remember that? That was
a
brutal,
great little
dude.
Transition. It was brutal. And not only was the product, and I mean, the product to me was kind of hilariously awkward and poor. The recorded live, I never understood exactly what that meant. But,
and they would lose like one out of every 10 recordings.
There were some issues behind the scenes. And even then, I would call you as in just the general public, but I would call and speak with them. And there were these, they were just these English chaps who, even with the great English / British accent to kind of make them sound a little more intelligent, as pretty much anybody on this side of the Atlantic always gives somebody with an accent about 10 or 15 extra IQ points, it seems. But some of the stuff that they would tell us was like mind-numbingly dumb and just simply unacceptable. So TalkShoe's certainly been an upgrade and has served a great kind of lily pad, I guess, for us to jump from one provider to another. But this won't impact us in any way, shape, or form. Again, like Bud said, if SoundCloud was the source that you were actually consuming the end product, then you're going to have 15, 20, 35, 45, however many days to make that transition. But the product itself won't be impacted anyway, and we'll keep you up to date as to all the avenues that you can find and consume the Nolcast.
By the way, I also advise you to do this for your other podcasts if you happen to be a SoundCloud user, because look, it's not like it's just us. If a lot of podcasts are initially hosted on SoundCloud and then shot out via RSS feed, if you understand how that works. So you know, if you happen to subscribe to some other pods, I know I did like three or four via the SoundCloud app, and today I went and unsubscribed on there and subscribed on a different platform. So anyway, let's get into the show, man.
Absolutely. So a little bit of news from the team before we jump into it, details or questions from the listeners. And just to pull back the curtain, this is a subject that we spoke about last podcast and didn't necessarily feel comfortable putting out there, and it wasn't that we had any salacious information or anything, but we just weren't positive as to the fate of Marcus Lewis and decided better to not put out a speculative conversation than one that we weren't positive of. So, I just mentioned that. It's been something that's kind of been brewing out there, and Lewis is somebody that we spoke of frequently throughout we've spoken about Marcus Lewis for a while now, certainly, but a guy that was really part of the optimism, if you had a lot of optimism last year before the season with what the defense could be, and it just never came to fruition. So certainly wish him a lot of luck. I've heard a couple places that he might ultimately end up, but Lewis certainly has some talent and put in particular places to succeed. He could still have a great college career, but that college career won't take place in Tallahassee and won't take place playing for Florida State.
Well, so the text read, because I was trying to text my buddy, a source at least, during the show last week when we actually started to answer this question, we cut out the answer. And he had told me he's pretty sure Lewis was transferring. And I texted him, I was like, how sure? Because I don't want to go with a single source. I mean, the guy's really good, but at the same time. And he hit me with 85% sure. I was like, ah, damn it. That's just not enough. Right. I need that like 95%. A guy who's been good to me previously. So, if a coach hits you with 85% sure, all right, well, that's not 100% sure. And you're a guy that's in a position to know. So I think it's like a thing where you think it's happening, but you're not 100% sure about it. We're just going to hold off. Today, Fisher confirmed, like you said, that Marcus Lewis is transferring. I don't think this has a big-time impact on the program. Basically, FSU is now down to 85 scholarships. Lewis was a guy, as you mentioned, very athletic, showed some promise, but at the same time, had a lot of struggles when he was on the field, was occasionally injured. I hope he finds his footing elsewhere, and is from all accounts a good locker room guy, and that kind of sucks to lose him on the one hand, but I don't think he was in line to play a lot, if at all, this year. And Florida State is now down to 85 scholarship players, which is something I know we had a lot of questions about. Three out of four ain't bad as far as projecting the guys to transfer off the roster, as I think the Nolcast was first to do this offseason on three of the four guys. Lewis, a little late on, but not sure compared to who. Maybe just to the news cycle. So down to 85. We also got word today officially from an AC Media Days that Deontay Sheffield, the kid they signed last year, who is going to blue shirt. And basically what blue shirt means is this. If a kid signs with you, but you made a purposeful effort to like not recruit him, wink, wink, officially at all, then what he can do is come on as a walk-on in his first year, play, participate, all that stuff, with kind of the understanding that he's going to get a scholarship in year two. And that's basically Deontay Sheffield, as we spoke about on our signing day episode, running back, corner, maybe receiver, very versatile athlete, kind of like a Deshaun Corbin is in this current class. He really loves FSU, man. The guy just is just a diehard Knoll through and through, as big as any of y'all listeners are, a kid from down the road in Niceville, and so he's going to blue shirt, and so he'll be on scholarship starting in 2018, but he will be on the roster, just not counting against the scholarship count, in 2017.
Okay, yeah. I think I've heard that term before. I certainly was never fully familiar with what that meant, so I'm not an expert in these, or I'm not not a know-it-all, certainly, but that's a new term even for me. So I'm glad you kind of hashed that out there. But it just sounds like it's a super preferred walk-on who has an understanding that there's a scholarship for him after year one. So with that, kind of Florida State wraps up its any kind of ambiguity surrounding the roster, surrounding the numbers on the roster. So any concern that a fan has as to how this is going to sort out, or that you may have to like nefariously cut a kid or something like that, that's not going to take place. And more or less, it seems as though the situation kind of resolved itself.
Exactly right. So as it usually does, and Florida State didn't really have that far to go. I do think that it's encouraging, at least to our knowledge, that nobody has, knock on wood here. Actually, this is either marble or granite. I think it's granite. So knock on granite here. Nobody has like failed out to our knowledge. So that's encouraging. I know there were some whispers about a couple guys, but we're obviously not going to put whispers out there about a dude failing
out. About academics?
Yeah, it just feels kind of like a scumbag move.
That's a classy move. So that's a lot. Class. All right, man, let's jump into the questions here, and we've got some good ones. And thank you, as always. Nolcast has we're fortunate for our listeners and all sorts of reasons, but particularly some of the correspondence that we have and questions that we have submitted from time to time. So let's jump into this, bud. First question of the night is, which stat needs to be great for Florida State to be a championship team? Some of the ones that this particular questionnaire throws out there is Francois's completion percentage, the red zone offense, third down pass efficiency, etc.
I will throw out one. I think it will be rushing yardage allowed outside the tackles. This is something that came to me. I think David Hale pulled this stat. I want to give credit here, but I don't have it saved. But anyway, Florida State's rushing yardage allowed on runs outside the tackles. So basically like what the defensive ends, outside backers, safeties, star position, corners, etc. Were responsible for more than doubled, Ingram, on a per carry basis from 2015 to 2016. That's a stat that needs to be corrected immediately. I have some ideas as to why perhaps this happened, like the fact that they played about 18 different guys at star and nickel and safety last year once Derwin went out. Also, the loss of Jalen Ramsey, who was a very underappreciated run defender in addition to be a tremendous pass defender.
Certainly, yeah.
They need to get that fixed up. You know, Josh Sweat was hurt and for part of the year it looked like he wasn't giving good effort. I think that will be better this year. It's hard for me to imagine that it's going to be worse. The only real guy you lose out there on the corner edge would be Marquez White. You do lose to Marcus Walker, who definitely made some good plays against the run, so you're going to have to fix that. But if you think this is going to improve, and I do, you probably think it's going to improve because of the collective, right?
And the fact that you have, knock on wood, granted or anything else, the fact that you have Derwin James for a year. Yeah, that's a whole different equation with that individual added into it. And I thought you brought up a lot of good points there, and not trying to rub salt into the wound at all. But one individual that we might have just talked about transferring was responsible for a decent amount of errors, particularly in the first couple of games. And certainly did no favors to that stat in general. So that well done by David Hale. I do think he was the gentleman who was first to kind of bring that to market, and that was pretty telling. And I think that's a good if you're gonna try to frame improvement around one particular stat, which is a significant challenge in and of itself, that's not a bad one to look at as you head into 2017.
All right, so. First of all, do you have the stat? I was trying to pull this up for the next question, but is there a stat that you are focused on?
Not really. I mean, I think it's a good question, and I'm not trying to belittle it at all, but I don't think there's one particular one that will directly translate to a championship team. I don't.
The other one I would look at is first down completion percentage against ranked teams. Staying out of those long down and distance, you got to find yourself in better leverage situations, in my opinion, if you want to go 12-0 or 11-1, which is basically the path to the playoff, barring some kind of crazy like 2007 type season. So, Ingram, our next question comes to you, and I'll throw this to you first. Francois, a potential Heisman candidate this year? What QBs would be? His average to average plus play ought to look good, right? Thanks.
Yeah, no, Francois was not a Heisman candidate this year. I mean, look, if Florida State is to go on some particularly special year, he may have an article or two written about him, because anytime you play quarterback for one of the better teams in the country, that seems to be a pretty good pathway to get yourself into the Heisman conversation. But no, I mean, absent one of the greatest leaps forward that we've seen in performance, I can't see any way, shape, or form to sit here and really have a serious conversation about Francois being a Heisman candidate.
And yet, the problem that I have with just outright saying no is that Florida State is going to start the year almost certainly as a top four team, right? I think they almost have to. Who do you like for the Heisman this year? I mean, okay, Sam Darnold at USC, Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma, right? Lamar Jackson, JT Barrett at Ohio State, who was terrible last year. Francois was actually better than he was. And now he's getting a new offensive coordinator in Kevin Wilson there at Ohio State, right, who I think will work some wonders. Jake Browning at Washington, I mean, he's not that good. Saquon Barkley, but is Penn State going to win enough games for him to win that thing? Jalen Hurts, who, you know, most people don't want over Francois. Mason Rudolph at Oklahoma State, I mean, again, can they win enough ball games? Jarrett Stidham at Auburn, the highest odds in the SEC, by the way. Think about that. A guy that is not taking a snap in the SEC has the highest odds in the SEC. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bo Scarborough, I don't – if he actually is having a good year, I can't see Bama running him enough times because they want to keep him healthy. You know, last year got kind of dinged up down the stretch. Darius Geis at LSU. Right now, Francois is fifth in the Heisman odds. And I think that speaks to sort of the default that we're seeing with Heisman now, in that it's basically just the quarterback of a team that wins a whole lot of games and who puts up really good numbers. Jimbo loves to chuck the ball around. I mean, if this team goes 11-1 or 12-0, I think you got to think this dude's in New York, unless you think Akers or Derwin get it. And I don't think Derwin can, because he's a defensive player and he doesn't really return punts.
I personally think Derwin may have a better chance of winning the Heisman than Francois does, bud. And that's just my opinion. And
you got some organic disagreement.
It is organic disagreement. And it's because I think of the way that that Florida State may win games. And I would love to think that Francois has a chance to go to New York. I'm not trying to bash a kid. I didn't see play last year that would really lead me to believe, even if Florida State has that record, that people will really be able to look back and identify him as necessarily the reason why they have that record. Now, I'm probably giving sports writers and a ridiculous amount of people have input in this award, even those that don't officially cast a ballot, way too much credit, and you're right, and I noted the same thing. There is a lazy tendency to just find a quarterback on a good team. But if this team is that caliber, at least as far as their record says they are, I think it's because of the play of the defense, and I think people like Derwin James may have an opportunity to make enough kind of national spotlight plays and may resonate a little bit more than the campaign that I necessarily see from Francois.
So if I'm hearing you right, you're basically saying that Derwin doing it and getting the preseason Heisman hype, there's a good chance that actually takes away from Francois' chances to win it.
I also think the way in which Florida State is going to play and potentially win games is going to take away from Francois' chance to win and Derwin's ability to put himself in situations that could win him a Heisman.
Which, by the way, I think you're referring to probably trying to play more defensive running the ball style football, and I agree with you. I believe Jimbo Fisher today, I saw it on Twitter. I wasn't at AC Media Days because I don't think it's a good business expense anymore to go.
It's a hell of a lot of fun. It's not a whole lot of business sense.
I mean, but now it's like, okay, there used to be a golf tournament where we would get all the coaches. And that was cool, man, because you could, like, sit down with the coaches after the tournament if you weren't in a cart with them and have a beer and, like, have an actual conversation with these guys and talk to them like they're humans as opposed to, like, up at a big podium. You know, that used to be they didn't broadcast all the stuff. If you're a journalist there, like today on Tomahawk, I just sat there in my boxers and watched the live feed and picked out the important parts and put them into our live blog on Tomahawk Nation for free. Cost me nothing to do it. I got the exact same thing that all the outlets got. And it's only one day. And now they put the coaches and the players at the same time. So you have to basically, if you're a one-man band, which I'm certainly not sending a crew up there, you got to basically pick who you want. And by the time you get to the final guy, he's already been asked all the questions you're going to ask mostly, and he's tired of answering them because they make the kids sit there for like an hour and 15 minutes in the room.
That's always been the case. I mean, right. There was a year that I was there that EJ Manuel fielded the same question probably 8 or 9 times, and he was pretty polite about it for about 5 or 6, and then finally was like, Heather Dinich finally asked him the same question for the final time, and he was like, I've answered this question at least 7 or 8 times. And the question was, what's different about Florida State this year? That's what everybody asks. What's going to be different? And Heather Dinich finally hit him that with a final time to test EJ's patience. So yeah, that's not a new phenomenon, and that's something that is commonly seen at all media days.
So, but it used to be back when you and I would go, the coach would go at different times than the players. Remember? So I could get Jimbo for the entirety of Jimbo. And then I could go over there and I could get like 30 minutes of LaMarcus Joyner and 30 minutes of Jameis if I needed to. Unfortunately, now it's a little different, so I don't go anymore. I spend Tomahawk's money differently, but we're going to go to the Jimbo camp there in July where most of the top prospects will be. So, anyway, what I was going to say is that on Twitter I saw that George Campbell apparently may not be fully recovered from like the abdominal or midsection injury or whatever he had, which further speaks to your point of FSU probably looking to run the football even more this year.
Yeah, George Campbell, that's another
receiver they don't have.
Looks like we're maybe even further away from having to really test ourselves on the George Campbell role. So hopefully that works out for that individual good kid from everything that I've heard, but not somebody that we're looking like we're going to be talking a whole lot about, at least as we enter the season. Bud, next question is all right. So we have 3 very similar and related questions, as you mentioned. They all have to do with the topic of coachings and coaching staffs. The first two in particular are pretty tied together. So let me just run through. Let's address the first one. If I run through all three, that's not going to make good conversation, and we'll forget probably 2 of them in the process of trying to answer one. How do you foresee the coaching staff playing out? Many have called for the firing of Trickett, Dawsey, Miller, and some for Kelly. Ultimately, what does the composition of the staff look like?
Well, I would say I would be surprised if the staff is together 100% next year. Would you? What do you think is more likely, that the staff returns intact among these 4 guys, or that there's a change?
You would have to – I mean, look, the consistency of staff and the consistency of the composition of the staff has been – pretty remarkable, particularly when you juxtapose that to that one offseason where you had, 6 assistants leave in the same summer or the same period of time.
Yeah, but the coaches at the time may have been terrible to work
with. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, the coaches.
I mean, people were leaving because they just didn't like working for the coach.
I'm just saying, when you juxtapose what you've seen in the past to how much this staff has stayed together, it's hard to really broadcast that you feel that there's going to be a whole lot of turnover or change in how the staff is composed, but at some point it just has to happen. You've had a lot of times where people and the fan base could raise an eye, and not as though you will be firing or hiring anybody based off what the fan base thinks, but there's just been a lot of questions, and I think at some point you have to address some of the individuals that were listed in that. And just come to terms with you've been here a while. It's been a good cycle. You've certainly been a good servant to Florida State, but I don't know that that the program will ultimately go if these particular units continue to perform at the level they have.
I completely agree with you on that. You know, I said on Twitter yesterday, I saw a lot of people talking offensive line, offensive line, offensive line, and something we brought up on the podcast. 2 receivers drafted in a decade of Lawrence Dawsey coaching. Yet, for some reason, the offensive line gets more of the blame. We understand why that is, because fans, when they watch on TV, offensive line is a sort of a failure position, right? The only time they get attention is when they screw up. If they do well, the guy who catches the ball, the guy who ran the ball, the guy who threw the ball typically get the credit. And that's just kind of how it is. But if you're looking for people to blame, I think the offensive line has consistently been better over Jimbo Fisher's 10 years here as an offensive coordinator than the receivers have, personally. I'm not saying it's been great, by the way. I just think it's been better than the receivers have been. So does the NFL. All right. Ingram, there was no shakeup of the staff, and clearly it needs to get younger and hungrier in some spots. Was this offseason a huge missed opportunity by Jimbo Fisher? I'll let you take that one first if you want.
Yeah, so again, a conversation or a question very, very much tied to the discussion that we just had. Was it a huge missed opportunity? I don't know that I can sit here and say that. And ultimately, Jimbo Fisher has forgotten more about football and the composition of staff and what he expects of people than I'll ever know. So I don't know that it's appropriate for me to sit here and say that Jimbo Fisher missed a huge opportunity. The only way that I would really say that Fisher missed a huge opportunity is if, you know, there was some kind of back channel communication, or if he knew of a surefire thing at one of these particular spots that we've talked about that could dramatically improve what was currently offered or what was currently on his staff. I don't know that that's the case, and have no reason to believe the case. And outside of knowledge of something like that, I'd have a hard time saying it was a huge missed opportunity, but very much agree with the question that this staff needs to get younger and maybe have a little bit of a change in general demographics. And that's been something that you and I have talked about for 2 or 3 years now.
What's going to make me answer in the negative, and I think you hit on this, is the word huge, right? It's not a huge missed opportunity. Could it be a missed opportunity? Sure. Could you have upgraded the receiver coach position or the linebacker coach position? Certainly you weren't going to mess with the defense coordinator position after you gave the guy a $3 million contract. Could you upgrade the offensive line coach position? Maybe, possibly. I don't know, but like you said, I don't know there was some slam dunk guy out there who you were going to go get, A. And B, I don't think it's a huge missed opportunity. I think you can argue a missed opportunity, certainly, and I think that maybe, you know, we'll see how this plays out in recruiting. I still think FSU will have a very strong recruiting class.
Bud, let's take a quick second to step away from the questions and step into conversation about a supporter that we've had for a long time now, Madison Social, for the Table Restaurant Group. It's been with us since day one and always have been nothing but a fantastic asset to the podcast, and has just been as good of a partner as we could ever hope for. And if we're going to sit here and talk about all the support that they've given us since day one, I have no problem reminding people of the product that we've talked about since day one, and that is the Reuben. And we record late on the evening of the 13th, which means that I will go ahead and give people a 3-day warning by the time that this is out, and that is that the 17th is Reuben Day and has always been Reuben Day at Madison Social. And if we have not done a good enough job in the 2+ years of discussing the Reuben, I'll point you to a post on Madison Social's Instagram page. It is a short 30-second video, but it is as good of a recap as to what the Reuben is and could be as anything that I've seen out there. So it's been, when you have a great product, you don't mess with it. They had a great product. It's what they, one of the first things that they really established as a signature dish. And just want to keep that in the back of people's mind as we approach the 17th, that it is and appears that it will be consistently moving forward, Reuben Day. And just go ahead and circle that 17th on your calendar and keep it in the back of your mind.
That sounds absolutely delicious. Look, Madison Social is a baller place to go, man. It's the place you need to be. By the way, coming up, they have boy band trivia. And we think that starting at some point, we may be leaking an answer to a trivia question every week on the show. I contacted Matt tonight about this, and I was like, hey, why don't we do kind of like how they do on Jeopardy, right, where the local news oftentimes before Jeopardy will, like, play one of the questions and, you know, the answers. So that way, if you watch the local news, you're already kind of one question ahead. I said, hey, What if we reveal an answer to the trivia question tonight, like how Jeopardy goes on the news in some markets? Got to watch the news to get one of the Jeopardy answers. Matt says, issue is we write them like day of. We're not that ahead of the game. And I said, oh, okay. So there's some chance we're currently in discussions about that kind of peek behind the curtain. But it's just cool how they keep coming up with all these events and ideas and things. It's like not just a restaurant. It's an experience. Same thing with Central and Township. Great beer hall there at Township, and a really cool tie-in concept at Central. Did you see that they were giving away free Italian-style slushies on 7-Eleven Day because there's no 7-Eleven in Tallahassee?
I did not know that.
That was pretty cool.
That is, I mean, very cool.
It's just creative stuff like that. Like, you go there, you have a blast. It's a business that supports the local Tallahassee economy and community overwhelmingly. Hey, you know what the other thing too is, if you go there, put a review on Yelp, a nice one. Say, hey, I heard about you guys on the Nolcast. Went and checked it out. It was great. I think they'd certainly appreciate that. And it's always good, as you know, from one small business to another, to get good reviews as opposed to the few folks that leave negative ones, like we occasionally get in iTunes. Speaking of which, give us those nice 5-star reviews in iTunes. That'd be great.
Final question tied to Jimbo staff or Jimbo and the staff in general. 2017, is it a defining/gut check season for Jimbo? A lot of juniors and seniors, a lot of blue chips, QB entering year three, Clemson, Bama reigning. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but this is that kind of ran together at the end there. But this in general is a conversation that seems to be had amongst the fan base in a couple different places, as far as is this a defining year? Is this a make or break year? Bud, I'll let you go ahead and field that one, and we can have a little bit of a broader discussion as to the idea as to if this is some type of a make or break year, if this dictates the future of Jimbo Fisher at Florida State.
So I'm just going to say no. I don't think that it is, right? We have Jimbo Fisher just signed what is effectively a 10-year, fully guaranteed contract. 10 years. A decade. You got a decade more of Jimbo Fisher, so you better like him. All right, period. Why did he get this contract? Is it because of the national title? That helps, certainly. Is it because he took over for a legend pretty much seamlessly? Yeah, that helps too. But what you have to realize is you got to put yourself in the shoes of the athletic director. The athletic director has a much different viewpoint of what a coach needs to do than Joe Fan, because the athletic director actually has skin in the game, as in a pretty nice job himself. And he doesn't want to have to leave Tallahassee. He doesn't want to have to leave a really cush job. If you're the AD, if you're Stan Wilcox, why do you give Jimbo this deal? Because he consistently wins 10 games a year. Almost minimum. I mean, I know he's won 9 once or twice, but on average, he's winning more than 10 games a year in his time in Tallahassee. That means that you're probably going to still average over 65,000-70,000 people in the stadium. And that means if you're the AD, you have ultimate job security. If you're Stan Wilcox, Jimbo Fisher is your job security. I don't care if basketball goes 0-40 or 40-0. If that football team is winning 10 games a year, you are set. So no, I don't think this is a defining year for Jimbo Fisher at all. To me, Jimbo Fisher has defined who he is, and who he is this. He is a great coach of his era. Unfortunately for him, there are 2 all-time great coaches currently coaching in this era, actually, and those are Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. Jimbo Fisher is not in that range. At least he's not proven the ability to do so yet. Those guys have won multiple national titles at multiple schools. Jimbo Fisher has 1 national title, and he's only been at 1 school. Those guys have actually won national championships with quarterbacks who were not superstars. I think Saban's got 3 or 4 of them like that, and then obviously Urban Meyer did it with a 3rd-string quarterback. Everybody else who's won a national championship in the last decade or so, who's not named Saban or Meyer, and I get that they've got most of those championships, has done it with a superstar QB with the exception of Les Miles in 2007, but that was a two-loss national champion, probably the wonkiest year of college football since the early 70s. So that's kind of my answer. To me, no, he's already defined his spot. I don't think it's a defining season or a gut check season at all. I mean, he's sort of in that Bob Stoops, Jim Harbaugh, Dabo Swinney, somewhere in that kind of 3-7 range as a head coach, which is still awesome. And no way as an AD would you change out your head coach on the off chance that you might be able to upgrade to one of the two guys in the country who you legitimately think is better than him in Saban or Meyer, both of which would not come here, by the way. The potential downside is much greater. And I get that the question is not really getting at, you know, is this season a hot seat or is this season deterministic of what Fisher will do in the future. But I do think that you got to realize Jimbo's locked in, man. This is who FSU has, and it's a damn good product.
Yeah, you married yourself to Jimbo Fisher last year. Absolutely. You did.
I still think that's a bad idea to go a whole decade on, by the way.
We'll see how that plays out. And I know that's something that we discussed at the time. But if you're Florida State and you feel like you've got one of the four or five better performers in the industry, I think you make your bed with him and see where he takes you. So it's a long contract and something we'll have an ample amount of time to review and give our analysis as to how it plays out. Bud,
and I got a little more on this,
please.
By the way. So I also think that this idea that you can like leverage Jimbo Fisher into firing somebody that you don't want on the staff now, that's gone. When you lock up a dude for 10 years, you are absolutely married to him. He is the coach and GM of this program. If he wants to keep the same staff on staff for the next decade with him, he can do it. He's got that leverage. You can't afford to fire the guy. His contract is 100% guaranteed. You have no leverage. You signed over your leverage to Jimbo when you gave him a decade-long contract. So the second part of this question, which actually comes via our DMs, I did not put this in the show notes, but I DM'd the guy my initial response, and I told him, I think we'll get to this, but no way. He's already defined his legacy as a 10-year fully guaranteed contract. He can go on going 9-3 or 10-2 forever and ever and ever, and the stadium will still fill up mostly. The AD will be super happy, and he can coach forever like that. That's just how it is. And the guy responded, he said, "Hey, I appreciate the reply, and I agree. Just to clarify, I meant more for him as a competitor. He does seem to care a lot about his legacy and how he stacks up to guys like Meyer and Saban." So if we go back and read the initial question, which was, is 2017 a defining/gut check season for Jimbo? A lot of the juniors and seniors, a lot of the blue chips, a QB entering year three, Bama, Clemson reigning, defending national, I think it means defending, like the reigning national champion. I think from that perspective, is it big for Jimbo, like personally for him? What do you think? Does that change your mind on that?
Personally, no. I have a hard time getting into that a whole lot. I mean, look, I think it's, and this will be a little contradictory as to what I said. Personally, for Jimbo Fisher, the Alabama game is probably the game in which he values the most, with the exception of facing Auburn in the national championship game since he's been at Florida State. So Saban's his mentor. Saban's everything that he models, or vast majority of what he models his program after, and having your team and your program in a game that, whether rightly or not, is being hyped as the greatest opener of all time, is certainly something that I'm sure Jimbo personally has wrapped himself in and cares to a larger extent, perhaps, than most games. But Jimbo's also a process guy, and I believe has probably talked a game long enough to actually convince himself into it about the importance of each game, etc. So I have a hard time thinking that this is going to be the year in which he necessarily like defines himself. Yeah, there's a lot of seniors and juniors, and there's a lot of blue chips, and there's some things that frame for this to particularly be a nice year. But I think just as that contract kind of married Jimbo Fisher, I think that also contract extended Jimbo Fisher's opportunity to kind of secure his place in college football, in kind of the standing of the college football world. And it's not necessarily a question that has to be examined on a year-by-year basis.
I think that's a fair statement, and I really don't have much to add to that. I do think that he, just because he's such a student of history, I think he does care a lot about it because he realizes this is a year where you could do something big, and I think that the whole I do wonder how much, like, the Nick Saban shadow matters to him, right? It, clearly, Saban's still a guy that he respects and chats with. And that whole Saban family, I think matters a lot. We had a source tell us that Will Muschamp was actually in town visiting and reviewing NC State film, and that Jimbo was actually back for that day before SC Media Day. So I certainly think he cares about the bragging rights.
Do you know that they once owned a beach house together?
I heard that. Okay. Yeah, but do they still own it or do they sell that thing?
I don't know. I wish we could get a good answer. And I'd love to hear more about that story in general, actually. But I do know that was out there for a period of time.
All right. What do you think was the more annoying story? Nick O'Leary's grandfather is Jack Nicklaus or the beach house?
Yeah, good question. Probably O'Leary, just because I thought it slighted the kid at some point. I mean, O'Leary was never going to be a pro prospect. We talked about that. But O'Leary was a hell of a tight end who developed his game a lot. And for a kid that was, 6'2", 240, something like that, was turned into a pretty well-rounded figure and a kid who should really just be referred to as Nick O'Leary. So that one bothered me a little bit more. But both of them were kind of equally obnoxious and equally repetitive to the point where it almost got to an anger in the fact that you continued to hear about
it. You do know the most annoying, like, fun fact type thing, right, that they would say on broadcast ever, and it's not FSU related. It's actually Florida related. You remember this?
I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to.
Right, it's kind of Florida and Texas related, and I think Florida started it first, if I recall. Who started first, Tebow or Colt McCoy? Tebow was first, right? And McCoy was like 09 because he got knocked out against Bama in that title game.
Yeah, he got crushed. Okay. His whole side got crushed.
Exactly. There's one of the games, and I think it might have been 08 in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party where, like, and I love Vern Lundquist, absolutely, but he must have mentioned that Tim Tebow and Riley Cooper were roommates like 155 times in that game. It was just like the Riley Cooper, Tim Tebow roommate narrative to me was actually more annoying than the Nick O'Leary thing or than the Jimbo Muschamp beach house. And then like the white kid receiver for Texas also happened to be roommates with Colt McCoy. So when that whole thing happened, it was like,
you're right.
It was like, oh my God, two white kids rooming together. We better talk about this incessantly. I'm like, oh my God, Jesus.
And one of them plays a skill position.
You know that they're tight with that relationship. That's probably why he goes to them. Like,
that's probably why the only reason the white kid gets on the field, actually.
I'm like, it's because he's open, because he's pretty good at the college level. But all right. Yeah, so that was kind of a fun little divergence there.
And not to drag this out anymore, but during Georgia, real special year during Rick's first period of time there. David Pollock and David Green, the two Davids, they played together on a youth league football
team. They did.
And that, oh my God, they drowned people.
Did they have some chemistry?
They did have some chemistry. Okay. And it was great because you had one David on one side of the ball and the other on the other. And that was just a special period of time, definitely.
God, I wish we had a video of that. Gary Danielson probably lost several times a game. So here's a question for you, and it's a follow-up that I'm actually just creating on the spot. If Fisher were to win a title this year, do you move him into that Saban-Meyer class, or do you just move him to, like, clearly the head of the current class that he's in, or somewhere in between?
I think it's more the first. I think Jimbo occupies a little bit of an interesting space in that he's not in the Meyer Saban category, but he's not really in anybody else's category either. I think he would be there's 1A and there's 1B, and then there's kind of Jimbo Fisher occupying his own little space in the college football world, and then you have the third group of kind of Dabo and well, really, there's not that many coaches that have won a national championship in general, but you probably have two or three, four other characters that live there in kind of that space in the coaching pantheon.
I think that's completely fair, and the best way I would sum that up is basically, if he wins another title, and all these people who do these coach rankings in the offseason, if you put anybody else but Jimbo at number three, you're basically just trolling.
You've got an agenda. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's the best way to settle that. All right. Next question. Jimbo made some comments today that the ACC was the best league. He cited that since 2013, FSU and Clemson were 12-3 against SEC teams, including Bama. And it's also noted that they didn't get to play most of the weaker SEC schools. He talked about draft picks, Heismans, national champions, etc. A, do you agree with him that over the last 4 years, the ACC has been the best league? And B, do you think it can be the best league this year?
Yes, I do agree with him. And today he said that, but it's not the first time he's entered that into the conversation. It's not the time, not the first time he's pushed that. I do think it's true, and I think I don't say that necessarily, certainly not from an ACC perspective or an ACC homer. But you can just look at a whole litany of facts to back that up, and if you don't really care to look at a whole lot of stuff, you can be pretty simplistic and just look at at who's won national championships and who's advanced to national championships and how many teams from the ACC have been represented in the college football playoff since its inception. So I think that's an accurate statement. To your second part of that question, does it continue? Probably not. No, it doesn't. But it doesn't mean that that's necessarily a bad thing for the ACC. I think the ACC should be commended as to the level that they've stepped their collective play up. And if they're not the best conference, I definitely think they have positioned themselves to be one of the two better conferences, certainly one of the three better conferences. And the ACC as a whole the conference has done a very good job of exploiting their recruiting footprint, which is a exceptional strength that they have. And I think they've upgraded their product a lot. I don't know that they've necessarily upgraded their product to the extent where they're consistently the best conference in the country.
Man, I think you just said it perfectly. I've got nothing to add to that. I agree that you can make a real good argument. It's been the best conference over the last 4 years, especially if you care what happens at the top. And certainly when you go back in the day and everybody was talking about how good the SEC was, sometimes that was only based on who was winning the title and not paying attention to how bad Mississippi State and Vanderbilt and South Carolina, all those schools were. So if the SEC gets to claim that, so do we in the ACC. All right, well, so we got a follow-up question. Will you explain the star and money positions? And I think we have done this maybe several years ago, so you may be right on that. But essentially here, if you go and pull up a coverage diagram or a playbook, right, your linebackers or your three kind of second-level defenders are labeled SMW, strong side linebacker, middle linebacker, weak side linebacker, or Sam, Mike, and Will, SMW. Now, in order to keep defenses consistent and not have to teach a million different coverages just based on personnel, but rather teach the same coverage and just swap out the personnel, what they do is instead of calling their nickel back in, on the board, they just draw him as an S. So if I'm the Sam linebacker, the strong side linebacker, I look out there and I see that's me. I'm right there. Maybe I'm drawing a little farther out. If I'm the star position, which is your traditional nickelback, hey, what does star start with? Oh, S. So I'm looking on the board for the S guy. All right, that's me. I'm on the board. Or in my notebook here, hey, look at that. Okay, so I'm the S. I do that. So on those plays where the star is in, the Sam linebacker, the strong side linebacker, comes off the field. The star position goes in. Now, he doesn't play in exactly the same spot, but the coverage responsibility is the same, and they call the coverage the same way. Money starts with an M. So under the same premise, he just goes and replaces the Mike linebacker or the middle linebacker. This is, by the way, the role that Nate Andrews is very good in, because Nate Andrews is not a good athlete, but he is a very instinctual athlete, instinctive guy, and is able to make a lot of plays when he doesn't have to cover a whole lot of space. This is the primary role that he was in when he grabbed all his interceptions as a true freshman, and one that I hope he's going to be able to play this year, because he's actually pretty good at it when he's in there.
There's nothing more I have to add to that. You did a good job describing it, and that was a pretty informative response there. And hopefully, if people weren't completely fluent in that, That's a nice little reminder as to the designation of star and money. But the next question is, since it happens almost every year, which player changes positions in 2017 and becomes an instant sensation?
All right. How about, instant sensation's tough because there's just not a whole lot of spots in his lineup where you think a guy can change positions and come in and dominate. Can we change this question and just predict somebody to change positions? Period?
I think we should completely have a cop-out here and talk about somebody that's already changed positions and whether or not there'll be a sensation. And that is, Bud, I've just completely hijacked your question, sir. I apologize. What type of play do you think Florida State gets out of Rick Leonard this year?
Oh, nicely done. I think Rick Leonard's going to be significantly improved. He struggled early on last year. I thought he played fairly well in the bowl game. Maybe not quite as much as this idea that he dominated in the bowl game, but he held his own, I think, on a lot of plays against a pretty good pass rusher in Taco Charlton for Michigan. I think he's going to be a good tackle for you this year. I do. I mean, last year was his first year really playing offensive tackle. He was a DN before that. He was mostly a DN in high school. The guy kept growing, putting on more muscle, and then they moved him over. They've had some success doing that, like a Cam Irving prior to him. So, Ingram, I think I'm going to be pretty happy with his play this year, most likely. Now, you got to grade that a little bit on a curve because in the first month of the season, he's going to be seeing Alabama, Miami, and NC State, three of the best defensive lines in the entire country. So I don't think he's going to go out there and dominate those guys. I just think you hope that he doesn't get totally whipped.
Good point. Good reminder for a reasoning as to how we judge his performance, particularly after the first quarter of the year.
I got two guys who I think could move. Arthur Williams, I think I would like to see him on offensive line potentially. Always kind of looked like an offensive line body to me. And there's a guy who I think on this team, if he doesn't work out on defensive line, I think could make a lot of money playing offensive line, and that's Corey Durden. Guy they just signed in the class, 6'6", 320. I saw him, I think I've talked about this in a podcast before, and I've got no insider information here, right? And I don't want to make it look like, hey, they're going to flip Durden to offensive line or that I knew this was coming or anything like that, because I don't. Just in my personal opinion, he looks like an offensive tackle's body. I've seen him dunk very impressively. He has some nice explosion. He has some good lateral quickness for his size. He has the length. If he happens to find himself not getting a whole lot of reps on the defensive side of the ball, checks cash pretty well on offensive linemen too. So that may be a good idea to think about, just saying.
That was one. What was the second one?
Arthur Williams potentially going over to offensive line.
That was two.
But he's older, so I don't know if that's actually going to happen.
Yeah, Williams, we've mentioned that previously, that he might be a candidate to perhaps move to the other side. But let's have a little bit of a depressing question, but it's certainly not one that's going to lift people's spirits. But this is posed as to what would Florida State's record be if JJ starts from the second game on?
All right. So I think what you have to figure out is which games would you flip from like a toss-up to a definite loss? And then are there any games that you would move from like the definite win category to the toss-up category? I'm pulling up the schedule here just so I don't miss anything. As far as the games that I think are sort of like losable already with Francois, not saying they will lose, but they're just not locked. They're not 100% wins. I would have Miami, NC State, Louisville, Clemson, Florida. So those are five games, right? If you expected to go kind of that 4-1, 3-2 range there, most likely, I think you would flip that to more like 2-3, 1-4, maybe. You know what I'm saying? If I say, hey, JJ starting against Miami, I'm still picking Florida State, but it's not as confidently. I'm not picking Florida State at Clemson or at Florida with JJ quarterback, personally. I'm not sure who I'd pick against Louisville. Probably Louisville at that point, just because I feel like they may be able to score some, and I don't know if JJ can keep up. NC State is going to be sneaky and tricky this year, especially because that's coming off that Miami game. Are there any games – okay, so it's that after the second game of the year. So Louisiana Monroe is still a win. At Wake Forest, I earnestly believe is still a win. At Duke, I still think it's a win. Boston College, I'm still not worried about. Home against Syracuse, I'm still not worried about. Home against Delaware State, I'm still not worried about. So in those 11 games, what do you think their record would be if JJ started the final 11?
Hard to see him not winning at least seven of those. This conversation is tough for me, man. Anytime we've ever gotten to record, even from the first podcast, it's been a great pleasure, and I've loved doing it. And I've said this to a lot of people. This podcast is an incredible experience for me because really, it's just the type of conversation that I would be having in general about Florida State football. And I get to work with somebody like you, and we've monetized this, and it's been a great experience. A long-winded way of saying that I've never had to press record on this podcast and fake it, and I don't necessarily know that I would, but I can't think of too many other ways that would take a significant amount of the enthusiasm and optimism that I have for this season away than reading a headline that said that J.J. Constantino was going to be the starting quarterback for Florida State for the rest of the 2017 season.
Yeah, that would man, I hope our advertisers re-up before then.
Yeah, J.J. No, that makes you
although,
feel
hey, the beer sales at Madison Social might really go up.
Madison Social may be able to fund this thing in and of itself by the liquid therapy that people try to take in within their four walls. So it's a good question. Not one that I hope we ever have to examine with any kind of detail or look back and judge ourselves as to how accurate we were.
I agree with you, though. I think that they would go either 7-4 or 8-3 in those final 11 if JJ had to start. So they would still make a bowl comfortably.
All right. Bud, one of the final questions that we're going to be able to get to tonight is right up your alley as far as it's a nice little wagering proposition, and that is someone ask you in this situation to weigh in on a gentleman's bet, who gets the first carry against Bama, and I'll let you break down the odds and how he might have come to this conclusion.
All right, yeah, so he says Patrick minus 105, Akers plus 125, or Francois plus 300. There's no option for the field, so like I flipped to Kermit or hand to the fullback or any other running back or not option. Or he says, agree with my Moneyline odds, ML meaning Moneyline, Moneyline odds, question mark. And in theory, yeah, I think that you have to have the odds fairly even, I think, for Patrick and Akers. I do believe that Akers is going to become the starter at some point this year. I think he will end up with more carries than Patrick if they both remain healthy. But on game one, you know, I don't know if he wants to take a true freshman ahead and give him the first carry against Alabama. The last guy to do that, by the way, a little bit of trivia here. Ingrid, do you remember the last true freshman to get the first carry of the season against Alabama?
Yes,
I do. What was his name?
He was from Jacksonville, and he was playing for Clemson.
Jamie Harper,
yes.
And he got the first carry because Clemson promised him that he would get the first carry if he signed there. And what did he do with that carry?
Put it on the ground.
He fumbled it, and Bama beat them like 38-0 in the dome. That was absolutely ridiculous.
That was Bama's announcement that they were going to be Bama. That was really the game. What Bama?
That was the Bama table game. We were like, Clemson, oh my God, these guys are
exactly.
These guys are huge.
That was, I think, Clemson came into that game ranked in the top 10, maybe 7, 9, somewhere in that area, and Alabama was ranked either 21, 23. Again, not exact numbers, but that's pretty close. And Bama, from the game's first play, just made a loud and declarative announcement that they were on the scene and going to attempt to absolutely physically dominate anybody that they lined up across from moving forward, and they've been pretty successful since then.
They have. So I like these pretty much even odds for Patrick and Akers, and Francois plus 300 I think makes some sense. Ultimately, these are pretty friendly odds for the house because they're not even offering a field option, which is also possible, and if somebody other than these three were to carry the ball, the house would win. So whoever sent this to us, I'm not going to play at your casino because those are not super fair to the better. We got one more. Who wins the field corner job? I think we talked about this in a previous episode. Both of us like Myers, but at the same time, Myers could play more star. You could have Levante Taylor out there. We know he played a decent bit of it in spring. You know, Carlos Becker could play more star. I think that's one of the fascinating battles of spring. I don't really have a huge favorite there. I do think that Myers is your second best corner at this point, though. It just depends on where you're going to deploy him, either at star or at field corner opposite of McFadden, given that they play the star position, you know, upwards of 75% of the time now.
Good answer there, Bud. We were able to cover that one in a manner that I think we should end with one nice avenue through the land of the hypothetical, and I thought this was a nice one. If every ACC team can bring back one alumnus in the prime of their game, who wins the conference? And the examples that this guy gives are Winston, Dion, Watson with Clemson, or whoever it may be that this particular school wants to bring back and put into uniform.
Wow. Okay. So does it have to be somebody that played in the ACC? Because this is going to matter for Miami. I think.
No. I'll allow Miami from or Syracuse if you want to put a particularly strong lacrosse player in Syracuse's backfield. You can certainly do that and try to tell me how they're going to win the conference, and that'll be pretty funny. But no, I just school, not necessarily all affiliation right with conference or time of affiliation.
So let's kick out the teams that we just don't think there's any chance, regardless of whether Syracuse gets Jim Brown or Donovan McNabb back. They're gone. No chance. Boston College, even if they have Matt Ryan, don't care. Because everybody gets to bring somebody back, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's okay. Fair. Right.
Yeah. No Duke, no NC State, even with Russell Wilson, I don't think. No Virginia, no Wake. I don't think UNC, unless you think like Lawrence Taylor or Julius Peppers are going to do it for you, which I don't really. So to me, there's like four teams that I think maybe would be in the conversation, right? To me, it's Vatek with Michael Vick, Miami with
Are you going quarterback?
I guess you got to go Jim Kelly, especially because on this Miami roster, the quarterback is their huge hole. Mm-hmm. Clemson, I think, right, just tries to bring back Deshaun because his defense might be even better than it was last year. And if you put Deshaun on that, they might still be like, – mm-hmm. I mean, he just did it. So that doesn't suck. And then I think at FSU, I think you have to go Jameis just because of how good he was and because of Jimbo's relationship with him.
Let's say non-quarterback. Just for okay, purpose of discussion.
Oh, okay. That does change things a lot.
Since I'm going to do that, I'll give you a second to ponder your answer. Mine would be
Miami Jerome Brown.
Right. Yeah.
I think. I mean, just I know Sean Taylor, but like hearing Dave Wannstedt on Bruce Feldman's now defunct Audible podcast the other day, talking about how just Jerome Brown was just so much different as a defensive tackle than anybody has ever had. I totally think that is a guy that would just make a huge difference for them. Who do you have?
Last name of Jones, and you could either pick a linebacker or an offensive tackle.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely taking Walter Jones on this team, yep, for sure. I think that makes a big-time difference. Kids, if you're listening to this, Walter Jones – before he would play for the Seahawks, did play for Florida State briefly. He started out at junior college, but he was a beast. Vatek, you going Bruce Smith?
I'll go Bruce Smith for reasons of anybody, but I'm just making up rules left and right on this question. I'll allow quarterback at any other school other than Florida State and Miami. Bruce Smith's going to have a hard time not choosing him if you can't choose number seven.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And then for Clemson, if we go non-quarterback, probably Sammy Watkins, right? Because you just lost Mike Williams.
I would think Sammy Watkins. Maybe Refrigerator Perry, if you just want to be really cheeky and go back, throw out a big physical lineman. But yeah, Watkins would add an incredible amount to this team and would they're so talented at wide receiver anyway. They've already got enough really good South Florida wide receivers, but I don't know why you need to go and give them another one. But that would probably be the direction, at least that immediately comes to mind as to what Clemson might do.
All right. I'm definitely down with that. That's kind of fun. I like these little hypotheticals. Speaking of which, somebody did send us a question, if you scroll up a little bit, that we missed. And they said, thanks for keeping the pod creative and diverse this summer. Veteran receivers perform well under Jimbo, right? Should we hope for a big leap out of that group? I don't know how we skipped over this question, but I figure we have a little bit of time here to answer it. And my answer is, I think that if you believe this team is a national championship caliber team, then you better believe that the receivers are going to take a jump. And there's reason to be optimistic. They played well in some really big games last year, and they made some nice catches, and they showed up big at some big moments. The question is going to be the thing that Jimbo Fisher lost his mind about in practice, the consistency. Will you run routes hard all the time, or at least the majority of the time? Will you act like more of a professional, more of a veteran, as the question implies, more of an upperclassman? You know, will you run the right routes? Will you care about the route you run? If I need it to run at 6 yards, don't run it at 8, because you know what? Those two extra steps screw up the timing and allows a DB to jump the ball or jump the route and take the pick six back the other way. Those are the questions I have. Will FSU's receivers play with discipline and consistency? I actually have some confidence in this group as far as going up and making plays on the football, which is not something that I've always been to say. What, Ingram, how about you? You think this guy, they're going to take a big-time leap?
I'll believe it when I see it. I'd love to see the emergence of the wide receivers, but to me, there's just a couple questions there that I have a hard time telling anybody to have a whole lot of confidence in the fact that they're going to make some significant jump forward. I think the pieces are there, and I think the talent's there, and I think I seriously think the two physical wide the two larger wide receivers are as physically gifted as Florida State's had since top end of Kelvin Benjamin, but I'm not sure that I can really have a full heart, or at least a full sense of confidence to think that they're going to dramatically improve their level of play.
I think that's a good spot to end. If we did not have this to discuss, did you see Jimbo's flowing locks today?
I haven't seen, no, I haven't seen what Jimbo brought to Greensboro as far as the hair game goes.
I feel like we have been the foremost leading podcast about Jimbo's hair, by the way, and have covered it really since like 2014-ish.
Since
that Rose Bowl loss.
Maybe
2013.
I don't want to say this, but I think we probably discussed Hair Island before any other pod really jumped on that either. So we've been bringing you, the listener, the latest and greatest when it comes to Jimbo's hair for a long time now. And I know that everybody listens to the podcast for that.
I will give you an opportunity to Google this and fill some airtime here, but I will tell you that he now has so much hair, he's not sure like what to do with all of it. Like, it is really, really nice. I'm going to G-chat you. Really good.
No, look at Jimbo.
Look at all that hair. That is incredible.
Good for him, man. He's I don't want to sidetrack us, but Jimbo Fisher has done a very good job as far as just growing into the job in general, and that is also as stupid and superficial and surface level as this sounds, that's in appearance as well. I mean, he dresses better, he takes better care of himself. There were times where you'd see Jimbo Fisher in front of a camera and be like,
he's working damn, a that's, lot.
That's a rough look to put yourself on national TV and be just completely, yeah, what about it?
It's a 20-hour day.
So,
man.
Yeah, he was working himself. He had drained the, it would appear at least as though he had drained his physical tank some, and he has, man, that side-by-side picture that you sent me is something else. So he's brought himself a long way, and he very much looks the part of one of the premier college coaches, and that sounds really horrible, but so much of coaching today is media relations and time spent in front of the camera. That it is something that, whether you like it or not, probably has a larger impact on job performance than you might just initially acknowledge as a fan or even think about.
And it matters in recruiting.
Certainly does.
You know, absolutely. The suit that he wears now is like so much better than that old like olive jacket that he used to wear as offensive coordinator. It was like, oh man, somebody steal that thing, please. Not only that, I don't know who dressed the guys today, but like Francois and Derwin were looking very dapper with the bow tie for Derwin and the solid looking suit there for Francois. So nice job on Florida State getting everybody together, looking sharp, looking professional at AC Media Days. The days of the polo where all three buttons are buttoned appear to be over. So that's a much better look. I think we're kind of out of topics for tonight.
We broke down the button polo game. I think that was a moment in time that you correctly identified is probably the end of tonight's podcast. So a nice, very casual conversation filled of some little bit of sarcasm at times, but a good look just kind of into the thoughts of the fan base. And hopefully we were able to, if we answered your question, that we were able to address it and actually answer the question that you were posing to us. And certainly appreciate the listenership that we have and the summer listens. I mean, look, the summer is a really interesting time for us because it's slower, but it also gives us a little bit of creative freedom with how we talk and what we talk about. But our numbers have been incredible. It's not something that we spend a whole lot of time talking about, but we kind of build the audience in the off season and maintain it during the season. And that sounds kind of contradictory, but that's really kind of how it's gone over the better part of the decade that we've done this. And we've never had as many listeners. Certainly we've never had as much support from our listeners. So just want to thank you for that. Bud, always a lot of fun doing these and have enjoyed all the years that we've done this. And like I say, frequently excited as to what we're going to bring to the listenership in 2017, and I'm fully confident that we will have by far our best product and a lot of unique things that we can start to roll out over the next 8 weeks or so.
All right, man. Let's talk to you. We actually got a pretty cool guest. We don't do a whole lot of guests because we're not interested in a whole lot of other people's opinions unless they're expert opinions. And we got one that'll be coming on soon. I can tease that. I'm pretty sure we're going to get him. I can't tell you who it is because I don't want anybody to interfere with that. But that will be fun. And Ingram, until next time, man, have a great weekend.
You too.
Yeah. Now we're the South Side. Now we're the West Side. Can I talk my shit again, even if I don't hit again? Dog, are you f***ing kidding? My hat, my shoes, my coat, Louis Vuitton sticks. With Donatella Versace, that's Louis Vuitton. I think Hennessy, I drink. I'm gone off that Bacardi, Limon, a Corona, I'm zoning. Class back in session, so I up to the grade. In 2 years, Dwayne Wayne became Dwayne Wade. And hey, please don't starve me. I'm like Gnarls Barkley, me Charles Barkley. I'm Pop the Barkers, I'm Hood the Parkers. While y'all was in limbo, I raised the bar up. I touched on everything.